All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Thursday, May 18th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com or DFSR.com. Here to bring you a baseball podcast for a split slate Thursday where we have about half the games going start right around 12 o'clock, I think, 12:30, and then the rest of them finishing up around the 7 o'clock hour. A couple teams off today, so we'll try to break it down slate by slate. It's an interesting day, all things considered, mostly because really hard, man. We spent, how much time did we spend off the air just looking at the pitchers?
30 minutes, because yeah. We started at 9, it's 9:30.
God, you're smart with time, man. I didn't even think.
I got an eye for this kind of thing.
Yeah. You really do. We talked a lot about off the air how you have the eye, like kind of a blink thing. Are you able to just look at things and just sort of know them?
Yeah, my subconscious just knows right from wrong. And even I just if you, knew what you were going
to
say.
So even if you think it's like a massive mistake to have Shoemaker over Pineda in the lineup, your subconscious is telling you it's correct.
Just do it, James.
And the lineup gets there last night. All right, so let's talk about the early slate first, because I suspect. Well, some people are going to get to listen to this before that goes off, and then we'll spend a little bit more time on the evening slate just because I think that there'll be more runtime for when we post the podcast. Quick, if you wanted to give like a bird's eye view of the early slate, I mean, is it kind of obvious, like it's just Lester and the Cubs, and just you wish that they weren't on the same team because it kind of it limits how many Cubs you can have in your lineup when you have to play Lester. Is that like pretty much the idea for the early?
I think so. It's really tough because, like, at one point, I thought maybe Jose Berrios was pitching on this slate, but turns out it's not. Hashtag doubleheader. Hashtag awesome. After that, like, I mean, certainly for big tournaments, there's some guys you can take a peek at. Dion Bundy is a guy I like a little bit. Dion.
Yeah. The Chappelle thing. That'll get me all the time. Well, like, just the Dion Dillon thing from Chappelle. I think
yeah,
that
just
will
look
be,
it up, man. Yeah.
To the day I die will make me giggle when I hear people say it. Keep going.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I like him for big tournaments. I mean, it's weird because a lot of these other cheaper arms, a lot of times you at least have some upside with them. But when you look at the other guys, like maybe, like, I don't know, Nick Pivetta has upside. He doesn't have upside in Texas. So this is a really tough slate. I mean, I think for the same reason, you can probably also put some Rangers in your lineup. You can probably stack just about anyone today for big tournaments in this slate too, because there's just so much bad pitching on it. Basically, after John Lester, Irvin Santana, Bundy, then you're like already in the deep dregs of the major leagues with guys like Amir Garrett, Martin Perez, Tyler Glasnow. So, yeah, there's a all at once pretty straightforward cash game, and then a lot of big tournament possibilities if you're willing to take on the variance.
I gotta tell you, buddy, the excitement and energy you're bringing about that early slate is making me just want to jam in entries. I mean, you sound like you're seeking counseling.
Well, I'm a natural salesman. And I should mention, we do have some affiliation with FanDuel. I'd like to say it's an unaffiliated thing, but they do send us some affiliate checks. So if you go there, make sure you click through our links if you're going to sign up on FanDuel today and play there.
So Lester, I think, ends up being the chalk. Now, the couple things that were outstanding here. There's no line on the game, but
that is outstanding.
Yeah, the wind is blowing out about 20 miles an hour out to, looks like, right center, which is probably going to, if the last couple days are any indication of what we can expect, we're probably going to see this line come in somewhere around 10, I think. I mean, I set it at 9.5 to start just because I think that's probably a reasonable guess if considering the weather and specifically the wind. And it's going to come in almost all on the Cubs side. I mean, they are minus 200 right now, so Lester's a clear favorite. It does limit his upside if the ball is just going to be traveling out of the park. So when you bump the line up, the problem is when you bump that line up to somewhere 9.5, and if he even creeps to 10, I know he's a minus 200 favorite, it actually might not make it so clear that he is a cash game pitcher because he could just get blown up, right? So this is a really tricky slate. He's clearly the best pedigree arm, so that's not really a question. You really do run into trouble, though, if he's going to cost you 10-5 and it's going to be at the sake of not rostering another Cubs bat who's in a pretty great situation. So you might end up just getting the worst of all worlds on this on the early
sure.
slate.
Well, Lester's been pretty erratic this year too, you know. Like, he's not quite as good as he had been last year. The walks are up, the K's are up a little bit. But yeah, you can't feel great about playing Lester in with the wind blowing out at 19 miles an hour. But what else are you going to do? Like, Tanner Roark is, I guess, maybe the next safest option after him, and he's been anything but safe this season. Roark's been out there, hasn't struck out more than, well, he had the one game with 8, but after that hasn't struck out more than 5 in a game. Like, I don't know. Is that really where you're going to get your safety so you can get another Cubs bat? I just don't see it.
Yeah, no. So it's really one big question mark. I could see people maybe just trying to fit Bundy in there, though. You and I really aren't huge fans of him. And then guys like Glasnow and Martin Perez and Jordan Zimmerman. I mean, the list is bad. So this is all to say, this slate is tricky. The obvious chalk is going to be those Cubs bats, depending on how. And it really only just depends how they make that order up. Like if they hit Zobrist first, I mean, you can pretty much count on Bryant and Rizzo hitting second and third. Maybe they hit Candelario cleanup and they have Russell Baez. They're going to go more righties here. You would think those guys are going to be chalk. We were saying off air, one other problem is that Candelario, if he were to hit cleanup, he's pretty much the best value on the slate, except that you can't play two third baseman on FanDuel. So you get buzzed off about not even being able to get his sort of cheaper high upside bat in the middle of that lineup in there, because you have to play Bryant over him just for the raw point. So this is a weird one. We don't sound this disinterested in a slate, or like not this. This lack of excitement, I think, doesn't usually come through, but this is just the problem when you get sort of the worlds aligning in a way that really just doesn't look all that great. I know some people also call these kind of things like GPP only kind of slates. That I don't know, that doesn't make sense to me all the time. Like, first of all, I see every slate as just like equal cash and GPP for the most part. Like, it's either good or it's bad. Like, do you ever hear people say like, when it looks bad, that means it's GPP only. Does that like make any sense to you, that saying? Like, I'm not sure what it stems from, or it just means it's like another code word for uncertain.
That's more it. I think that theoretically, if you're using a projection system like ours, your edge will be pretty similar from night to night on the field. There are definitely some nights where you can get increased edge if there's a perception of chalk elsewhere in the industry that from, you know, our projection system sees as inaccurate. But yeah, I think every slate has the same potential. I would guess, I mean, just to circle back on Bundy for a second, I would guess that especially if that Cubs line comes in, say 10 or higher, you might see some Bundy. It's kind of weird because his ERA this season is excellent, 2.26. He's had a quality start in every single start that he's been out there on the mound. But the peripherals hadn't been showing up, right? Like, he had that great game opening up against Toronto, and then had, I'll read his K total since then, 3-6, 3-3, 2-3, but then 8 against Kansas City in a really tough matchup for opposing pitchers, at least when it comes to striking guys out. So I don't really know what to make of Bundy. He's still super, super young is the issue with him. And so, you know, he's kind of making it work with the non-strikeout stuff. He has been very consistent from a fantasy perspective this season, but I'm still pretty concerned about the lack of peripheral success. So, but I wouldn't be surprised. Like, if that line does come in pretty high, I wouldn't be surprised if Bundy creeps his way into some lineups for us. Just depending on, you know, what we actually decide to make of that that big weather situation.
Which is crazy too, because Detroit is like projected for like a little south of 5 runs, right? So like, this is where you're just running into issues. I think some people might talk themselves into Ervin Santana simply because that ERA is 1.5. I would caution against that. His xFIP is dramatically worse. He's been incredibly lucky. So if you look at him and think that he's anywhere close to a sub-2 ERA guy, it's just really just not the case. The guy is who we think he is. He strikes out less than 7 batters per 9. He walks a bunch of guys. The xFIP is 4.5, so 3 full runs higher, thanks to, you rarely see this, a 0.128 BABIP through 54 innings for a guy is about as lucky as you could ever get for a pitcher. So he combines the 0.12 BABIP with a 98% left on base percentage. So,
well, this is like my old 5-minute time machine joke that I used to tell, where like I decided I could pitch in the major leagues if I just had a 5-minute time machine, because I would just throw these things and the batters would all hit lasers, but I would just rewind 5 minutes if they didn't land right in someone's glove, you know? And I feel like that's what Ervin Santana's kind of doing this season. He's like, well, some guys get on, and then every single guy who gets on doesn't score. That's my plan.
54 innings is the highest I've ever seen. Unequivocally, there's no way you can't run this hot as Ervin Santana. So I would caution against him. He still stinks. All right, sure. Let's talk.
And I think I'm going to make one more quick note about the, because we talk about xFIP a lot on the show, and I think, you know, a lot of our audience certainly is pretty sabermetrically minded or statistically minded. But for those of you who don't understand, you know, why that matters, I think Bundy is actually a pretty interesting example here. So both Bundy and Santana have been running hot in terms of ERA versus xFIP this season. But Bundy, it's interesting because you'll see this happen all the time where a pitcher is not really having probably the level of success they want, so they change things up. In Bundy's case, this year he's staying around the plate a lot more, and so you're like, hey, the walks are down. So if you listen to like an Orioles game, and heaven forbid you use MLB TV and you get their home announcers, you'll hear them say like, Dylan this season's really cutting down on the walks, Jim, you know, and it's showing, paying off. He's down to a 2.26 ERA, and that's true. But the problem is, if you're just not quite at the level of, you know, a really good major league pitcher, oftentimes when you change something, you sacrifice something else, right? So like, yeah, sure, he's walking fewer guys, but he's striking out at fewer guys as well too, because he's around the plate so much more. And the same thing goes if you, you know, pitch a little crazier, you get a lot more strikeouts, but now all of a sudden you're walking everyone. So yeah, just don't, I guess, don't take the narrative on gains in some certain area. Like, yeah, Bundy's walks are, it's a good achievement to move up from 3.5 walks a game to 2.9 or 2.09. But in and of itself, you just can't look at that. So yeah, both Santana and Bundy, they are both looking like pumpkins, people ready to turn into pumpkins at midnight. That's an analogy, Doug, from Cinderella. So,
oh, I'll look that one. I'll Google that one later.
All right, but before we get to the night slate, let's talk about NoHalftime.com, because we're in full No Halftime season, because No Halftime season lasts all year round, Doug. What No Halftime does, that was pretty good, by the way. Just made that up.
That's great, man. Yeah, this is No Halftime month. Yeah.
No Halftime is a great app. Still revolutionary, I would say, even though they're pretty well established at this point. Just basically allows you to go in there and make one-on-one daily fantasy sports contests. So you pick a player, and then you pick someone you think your player is going to outperform. No salaries, nothing like that. And then you issue your challenge to the world. And if people accept it, great. Then it's game on. You put your money up, they put their money up, and it's winner take all. If no one accepts it, no big deal. You just get your money right back. And then you can also use No Halftime's app to go around and look for challenges that other people have issued. And typically during baseball season, there's a lot of value to be had. A lot of people just putting in challenges for their teams they like or whatever, and kind of ignoring, or like rivalries, or, you know, people just do all sorts of stupid stuff. So NoHalftime.com, check out the app, use promo code DFSR25, and you will get a $25 bonus on your first deposit up to $25. So check them out, NoHalftime.com. We will see you there. Late slate, Doug. Let's do it.
I was actually just looking at No Halftime while you were reading that, because I was looking at it, and I already saw some like Daniel Murphy kind of versus Cesar Hernandez stuff. So I'm going to be checking back into this after we get off the podcast, because yeah, there always are available, just kind of contests you can pick up. And then you don't even need to worry about like some injury stuff over there too, because they'll just void it if the guy doesn't play. So it's like no problem just picking up some of these things early on in the day or whatever. And because if the guy doesn't play, then you're all good too. So yeah, no, I love No Halftime. All right, evening slate is like the early slate, except you take away the good pitcher in John Lester, and then you're just kind of left, and then you take away the good team in the Cubs, and then you're just kind of left with the evening slate here. So that's like the major difference is the Cubs aren't on the evening slate, but the same kind of uncertainty kind of revolves around just the rest of this thing, because man, the pitching here. I mean, do you think, so for starters, the top guy in the system right now, and probably rightfully so, is Ryu. Do you think he ends up becoming just kind of the chalk play against Miami here, just as like a default measure because of the other names, and he just is a high money line guy? Like, is he just going to be the cash game kind of chalk guy, and that's who everyone's going to play?
I don't know about everyone. I think he will be very heavily owned for all the reasons you cited there. Primarily, he's also just so cheap, I think, is a big reason there too. And, you know, he's kind of a weird pitcher, because last year he was stone cold awful after missing a season. And I think that still sits in people's mind. This season, he's kind of shown a lot of the effects of a pitcher who took a long time off, which is to say the stuff is still kind of there, but the control and the command isn't there yet. And I think for that reason, he won't be just kind of like the slam dunk chalk play that he might otherwise be, in spite of, you know, the Vegas total being there and kind of the K per nine has been strong this season, etc. So yeah, I think he will be heavily owned, but I don't think it's as simple as just close your eyes and plug him in and ignore everyone else.
He's very cheap, so he's only $7,100 on FanDuel. So once you play him, you're then basically rostering every expensive bat that you want to. That's kind of usually the case with anyone under $10,000, really, right? Just because you're able to get, even on short slates, you're usually able to get a cheap guy hitting at the top of the order, and you can still jam in some expensive guys. A guy at $7,100 that you feel, if there's a guy at that price that you don't feel terrible about, then at that point you're just picking, you have your pick of bats.
It's going to be a matter. That's rarely the right cash game strategy though, right? I mean, on a normal night, being like, ooh, there's a pitcher at $6,000 that's not terrible, I'll just play him and all the best bats. Like, that's.
Oh, right, right.
You never counsel doing that, right?
Of course, no, but there isn't anyone better in this game. If any list of guys existed on this slate, you know, Kershaw, well, Thor's hurt, Scherzer, any of these guys, Sale, anyone like that, even the step below those guys, I wouldn't necessarily suggest us doing that. But that's just not the case here, because the list of names after him are both more expensive and probably worse. So
I have a guy who's more expensive, but I don't think he's worse. So I'm going to talk about him for a second, and that's one Marcus Stroman, Doug. Stroman's a guy that we've tepidly thrown out there from time to time. And I say tepidly just because the guy doesn't really, he doesn't have the strikeout profile that you're looking for in a pitcher that's over $9,000 for sure. But the thing about Stroman that I actually really like is just kind of the consistency. I mean, he's an extreme ground ball pitcher. That's the first thing to point out about him. Roughly around a 60% ground ball rate as a starter. That's just super, super strong. You just don't really see that from many pitchers, the side of, you know, the Brandon Webbs and Dallas Keuchels of the world. So that's kind of an underrated stat that I think most people ignore. And for DFS purposes, it doesn't really help you to get a lot of ground balls other than the fact that it helps you give up fewer runs. But it does mean he pitches a little bit deeper into games. And so, you know, while Stroman, very, very unexciting, the two major things he has going for him are that consistency and a pretty decent league average-ish matchup with the Braves. It helps him to also go and pitch in a National League park. But yeah, still a guy I'm at least considering.
Yeah, he's like Keuchel light. Like, he's just, he doesn't strike out quite as many guys. He walks a few more. He's just slightly worse, but they're basically the same pitcher. I mean, besides just like, you know, one's a lefty, one's a righter. But like, their numbers are very similar. Keuchel's just a better version of what Stroman is. He's just not, he's not that much of a favorite. The Braves do not really strike out that much as a team, so you're not getting, you're really not getting much upside. I will say the Marlins don't strike out that much as a team either, so it's not like Ryu has this insane upside facing that squad either. Ryu is a minus 188 favorite. Stroman, I believe, is like only, he's only minus 117 right now. So I'm just not sure I want to pay $2,000 more for a guy who is probably just worse. I get what you're saying. He's consistent. And you are worried a little bit about the Ryu track record, especially carrying over from last year when things didn't look that great. But I think for my money, and just considering that I don't love either, I'll just take the savings on, I'll take the savings on Ryu and move on. Maybe think about pairing them together on DraftKings. I think you are going to have an issue, a starting pitcher two-ish issue on DraftKings, where it's just really not going to look that good no matter
how many bad pitchers can you roster in one game. It's going to be your, the game you're going to be playing with yourself on DraftKings tonight, because
right, I mean, like, I think Ryu's still 9,100. You're not worried about that. I think you easily roster him. Stroman, I believe, was like, Stroman's 11-3. Like, I don't think
that's expensive.
It's expensive, and the K upside isn't there, and there's enough downside at that price because now you are sacrificing some bats. Because really, he's 11-3. No one else is over nine. No one else is over 9,100, and that's Ryu. So you're going to pay $2,500 extra.
He's worked up, folks.
What's that?
He's indignant. He's not paying that $2,500 extra. Doesn't matter what I said.
Listen, like me negotiating for a car. I'm like, I'm just not. You can go talk to your manager all you want. I just want to pay.
I want to pay less is what I'm trying to say here. So you can go get the manager. You can go pretend to do stuff in the back room. I'm not paying for Marcus
Stroman. I'm just not going to do it. And I'm starting to turn red. And I'm just going to start fumbling my words, which is going to kill my negotiating power. Because now you think I'm dumb. But no, I just don't want to pay that much extra for him. Again, though, who do we have here? I can see people talking themselves into Danny Duffy. I'm no fan of Duffy. I think that last year was a fluke, if anything. I don't know if you agree with me, but the Danny Duffy part where he was a strikeout printing guy and was just kind of like creeping toward this ace level dude, I don't really see it. He was a guy that I wrote about in a piece last week where I just thought it was maybe a smoke and mirrors kind of thing. He sort of proved that again to some degree this year. Oh no, excuse me, to a big degree this year, in that he's just not the same kind of guy. So I don't know if people talk themselves into him. I mean, do you have any thoughts on Duffy in particular, or is that not a guy you're really targeting?
Nah, not a guy I'm targeting. And well, and especially not tonight. Like, the matchup isn't there anyway. So while it's a short slate, and I mean, the stupid split slates always get us here. Thursday's already a light day for baseball, and then they split the slate in half, and it's just like, you really got your pick, a bunch of losers. But yeah, the combination of believing Duffy's going to turn pumpkin again, and I nailed it that time, and the fact that he's just up against the Yankees, I just don't see why I should bother. But let's talk a little bit about that matchup on the other side, though. So Jordan Montgomery, young guy, we have such a small sample size of what he can do in the major leagues, but is kind of a real prospect. You know, had some big-time success in the lower levels of the minors, and then was at least reasonable in the higher levels. What are you making of him so far?
Yeah, no, I actually like him. He's the guy that I wanted to, I could end up just rostering him as a starting pitcher too. The Royals do not strike out that much, so that is an issue, but that's kind of the theme for most of the slate, is that these guys, none of these teams strike out at any great rate. Like, we don't have the White Sox here, or the Padres, or any teams like that, or even the Rays, who will consistently strike out a lot, even if they can provide some upside with their power. But Montgomery's a guy, he struggled in this first game of the season, which is probably to be expected, although he's, the strikeout numbers have pretty much been there for him since the start. So even in 4 2/3 in his very first major league game, he still struck out 7. His best game probably, well, from a strikeout and innings perspective, was the last game against Houston, which is a very tough matchup. So he goes 6 innings and strikes out 7 against Houston. He did let up 4 runs, but you can sort of forgive him again in that matchup. That's one of the tougher matchups in baseball, right? So he was actually just fine enough against the Cubs too, which is the other I would say more difficult matchups you can get. He went 6 2/3, only struck out 3 there. You're worried about the walks. You don't have the K upside against the Royals that you want, but again, you don't have that for any.
Tell me more. This is sounding great.
He's the guy actually right now. Probably, if gun to my head, I probably would roster him as the starting pitcher too. The system likes Teheran. I think that's drawing probably too much on some historical stuff. He's really struggled this season. So no, I do like Montgomery here. I think you can talk yourself into it. I think he's a slight favorite. So, you know, yeah, not bad. I mean, you don't like Teheran, do you? He's a guy I can see us like lowering as the day goes on.
Yeah, I could see that happening also. I mean, it's worth noting on Montgomery, like the guy still does have a 4.8 xFIP this season. It's not like he's been crushing anyone. I know Teheran's been bad too. And actually Teheran's, it's kind of interesting because last year he made what looked like very sensible and reasonable gains. Teheran's only 26 years old, so he's really, really young. And you don't want to make too many audacious claims about, and you're not, but one doesn't want to make too many audacious claims about, you know, how good or bad he is, I don't personally think. But last year, you know, he did get a little bit lucky too. You know, he started giving up more fly balls, and I talked about this earlier, but he started making some trades and some concessions, did boost the K rate, did lower the walk rate, but the increase in fly balls did cause some problems for him, you know, that up over a 4.1 xFIP once again. So no, I don't really love Teheran, but it's a question of who do I love. I don't love anyone on this slate. Teheran does have a kind of interesting matchup with the Blue Jays, getting them out of their juicy home park. I could see, I don't know that I would be miserable rostering him or Montgomery. Like, both of those guys feel exactly the same to me.
All right, before we get out of here, let's talk some stacks for this evening slate. You know, we mentioned how the pitching is not really what we would desire, especially for cash games. The problem is we were able to make sort of semi cases for a lot of these pitchers, and when that's the case, you actually do start running out of teams that you feel comfortable, I don't know, stacking, or you feel comfortable getting, I don't know, high EV on them going into the game, because a lot of the guys we mentioned are middling without being train wreck awful. But I don't know if you see some stacks here that we can maybe just sort of gravitate toward, at least in cash games or even tournaments.
Well, and it's the combination of that, and we have basically all teams that can't really hit or bad parks. Like,
well, the bad park thing, this is just a who's who of bad parks.
This is what I'm saying. Like, this is a crazy slate. I don't know.
Where is where?
Well, we talked about the early slate and a game or a slate not being GPP or cash game viable. I do think there's probably edge to be had in this slate, but this is going to be a low scoring night, I would guess. So with that in mind, I think that this kind of opens up some opportunities for big tournaments for us to take some risks that maybe we wouldn't normally take. And I think what I'm going to really key in on is just trying to find either bad or inexperienced pitchers to target. Because, yeah, while Teheran's had his struggles this season, like stacking the Blue Jays away from their home park against him isn't probably where I want to wind up here. But yeah, so jumping right in, I'm going to go with Seattle against the White Sox today. Seattle, obviously, like, there's some problems there with Cano being hurt. But Dylan Covey, I think I brought this up last time, but he's definitely moving in the rare bad sort of category, giving up almost 3 home runs per 9 this season, Doug. This guy's an animal. He just can't keep the ball in the park whatsoever. That was an issue for him in the minors as well. He's kind of an interesting classic case where the team doesn't understand their own stats. So he got promoted to double A last year. He went in there and he had a 1.84 ERA. And they were like, Dylan's ready, man. Let's bump him up to the majors. Except for he had a 5 walk rate in double A last year. Like, who thinks this guy's a major league viable pitcher? Not the people that have faced him, I'll tell you that much. He has an 8 ERA this season, 5.29 xFIP. He's about as bad as it gets in terms of a guy who can continue to take the mound in the majors. And while Seattle doesn't feature a lot of the huge scary bats that maybe you want to see when you're going for a big stack, I think that actually just leads to them being very affordably priced. And there's still some guys who can bruise you here. You know, Gamble, Cruz, Seager, right up the middle of the lineup. I think there's potential for a pretty big night here.
No, I think they have the second highest implied run line. They better have the highest implied run line. And that makes sense because Covey is, I mentioned that there weren't a lot of rare bad pitchers. He is one of the rare bad pitchers. So I think you do see a lot of stacks coming in on that team. Of course, the park does not help you here, but every team is in the situation where the park is not helping them. So I don't think there's I don't think there's one park on this slate that is plus in terms of power or like above league average in terms of power. I could be wrong about that, but just on the outside of just glancing at these places, yeah, this is not typically where you go to find your power bats. I do think people will be on the middle of that Mariners order. I also think they're going to be on the middle of this Dodgers lineup, or at least the top three to four guys in that lineup. Edison Volquez is a guy where he struck out. Like, so he's run really hot in strikeouts. He's striking out almost 10 per nine this year. It looks completely unsustainable to me. Also, he's also thrown in more than six walk per nine stats. So he's like
yes, I'm striking out three more guys per nine.
I'm gonna be a three true outcome pitcher is what I'm gonna do. Like, we don't exist a lot, but every once in a while we get a guy just like me that's just gonna groove balls and also walk guys and also strike them out. Now, he's not very good.
Example 16 on the slate of, he has an identical xFIP to last season in spite of adding three to his walks and three to his strikeouts, so
which is pretty tough to do. It's hard to add that much, even in a short sample size.
Well, all he's doing is just throwing his hardest, right? Like, he just doesn't care where it goes. He just goes up there and he's like, whatever, man. Like, I wasn't good last year anyway. Who cares?
No, you're still getting deals. Like, the Dodgers will switch their order around a little bit, but if Peterson's hitting leadoff, him at 2,700 seems like an auto lock play at least for cash games if he's going to hit the top of the lineup. Seager, Turner's a reverse splits guy, so you're not worried about the righty righty matchup for him. Grandal's been really good this season. He's coming off a great season last year, so you're not really getting away with anything. Bellinger was a guy who ran hot for a little bit, has struggled recently. That's just, look, streaks happen in baseball. People get way, way, way overboard on streaks for baseball players, to their own demise, typically over the long term.
Which is to say, you should basically ignore them completely, other than an indication that a guy's healthy.
Yeah, that's basically. And Bellinger's a guy like we didn't know that much about. He came in, hit some home runs, he looked really good, and he was a fine play hitting in the middle of the order. Now he's at the 3,500. If he's at 3,500 and hitting fifth, you're not getting away with a ton on him, though. It is a good matchup, but I do caution people to say, you know, well, I think you said it before, it's like, if streaks are so good, why do they stop, right? So like, like, this is why you just can't buy into streaks or buy into players being quote unquote hot, or he's raking the ball right now. Yeah, great, it just doesn't matter. Like, it does, those things don't matter. It's pretty much been proven that streaks are not a real thing in baseball, and even if they are a real thing, predicting when they're going to start and stop is impossible. So that, the real thing about predicting it is, it is impossible. So I wouldn't get
one other classic thing with Bellinger too is, like, he was like solid in the minors for sure, but then last year got the promotion to AAA and then started this season and was crushing AAA, and so he had like legit over 1,000 OPS over the course of his AAA career, except for that's 89 plate appearances. So is he that guy, or is he the guy in that very same season who could only manage an 800 OPS against double A pitching? You know, I tend to think more of the latter. I think he's still a reasonable play. Like, he's still a pretty good player. He's just not going to, he's not going to have an 800 OPS.
Oh yeah. No, I'm not shitting on Bellinger. He's fine. It's not that. It's more just the
weak language. Now we're getting the explicit tag on iTunes.
Oh, can that happen? I'll take it out. I'm not dumping on him by any means. He's fine. It's just that people think he's the next coming because he comes up and hits a couple of home runs, and now you want to pay. Because you'll see people say things like, oh, Bellinger doesn't matter the price. That guy's raking right now. You're like, well, dude, it does. So I really want to caution people against ideas like that. Another team I could see I could see myself stacking against, I don't mind stacking the Yankees here against Duffy. Again, just going back to where I'm not totally believing in Danny Duffy being an ace, and I think that's starting to catch on a little bit more the more that he struggles over the course of the year. That line, Sanchez, Holiday, for some reason they hit Starlin Castro cleanup for reasons I'll never understand, and then Aaron Judge. Like, if you're going to go righty down that 2 through 4 part of the lineup, if that's what they end up doing with their lineup, I do like that part of it. I don't even mind Gardner going lefty-lefty if he's going to hit cleanup, lead off too.
Yeah, that could be a beating for sure.
So, I don't mind stacking the Yankees here. I think you see Sanchez as somewhat of a chalk play if you're not going to have to pay anything for pitching, because he's by far the best pedigree catcher that you're really going to get almost on any slate in terms of a bat. So, no, I don't mind the Yankees here. Anyone else that you can just kind of, I don't know, pick for a one-off here, or does that pretty much cover it?
No, I think you can also maybe look at the A's. They're kind of similar in the Mariners in that they're not really exciting you with the actual bats they have going, but they have a total unknown commodity pitching against them, and Hector Velasquez. Velasquez, you know, I had to look him up because he was a pretty under-the-radar signing by Boston. He is very questionable pedigree here. Like, he's 28 years old. He's only got 29 minor league innings that we can point to right now, and he wasn't very good in them. You know, he had a 1.5 ERA, but 6 Ks and 1.5 walks per nine is not really inspiring any sort of great confidence in me. And that strikes me as like when you quote unquote know how to pitch, and you can really get away with mistakes around the zone in the minors because the hitters are so unsophisticated. But while the A's, maybe they don't feature a lot of huge name bats, all the guys on the A's were great in the minors, right? That's why they're in the majors now. So I think given the confluence of factors there, I do think there's a decent chance that they might go off there. I don't really, I mean, it's easy and kind of a cop-out to say just stack the middle of the order. I don't really know that there's any names in particular that I'm over the moon about getting in here. I mean, obviously some of the big upside guys, like Chris Davis, I guess, all my stacks would feature him to some degree. You can make a case for Jed Lowrie, maybe Matt Joyce too, but yeah, there's some potential there for just a very cheap sort of, or cheap offbeat stack that you can pair with one of the more expensive ones and potentially do something.
And that's the thing too. If you're going to be stacking tonight and you're going to play with one of these cheaper arms, you might just be leaving money on the table, and it's probably okay if you think you're going to get separation off that. Because if you're
for big tournaments.
Oh yeah, if you're going to stack like Ryu and then stack someone like, I mean, really any of these, like if you're going to even do like the Dodgers and the A's together as a double stack, you're almost certainly leaving money on the table and like maybe significant amount of money. The thing with baseball and like other sports is you can kind of get away with that, right? Like you can, there are times where you can get away with just leaving some money on the table because the variance is so high that some of these players can be the team that like turn in the one or two home run performances. And look, the more expensive guys are more likely to do it. But you don't need to roster every single one of your dollars in a double stacking tournament only situation. That's kind of all I mean for that. So, and if you're doing that with a team like the A's, you're almost certainly leaving money out there. All right, we're gonna get out of here for today. Enjoy the double slate of baseball. I know. If we didn't sound that excited about it, it's not because we don't like baseball, buddy. It's just because
don't blame us.
Blame the scheduling and blame some of these teams not having any pitchers or them rostering guys in bad ballparks. We're from DFSR.com. DFSR.com/MLB, which gets you a free 3-day trial into our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. You can also go over there and check out, we still have NBA lineups still going up, and just go check out all the free content we have going up on a day-to-day basis. Baseball, PGA going up there, NASCAR, Chris Durrell crushing those sports for us. So anyway, DFSR.com, everything you need to get yourself going or keep winning in DFS. Buddy, I'll talk to you again tomorrow for a full Friday in baseball.
Peace.